To call this meeting of the Legacy Finance Committee to order. And the
do we have? One, two.
We, what? All right. We have a quorum. And therefore, we can approve the minutes of March 2nd. And I know that Representative Green has looked them over carefully. Would you move their approval, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I will move the minutes.
Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. We're rolling. So, trying to move right along, we have four overviews today. Wait, one, two, three, four, five overviews today. And a bill at the end, so we have to move right along. First of all, the overview and funding request for the Bell Museum. And would the bell ringers take a position? Welcome to the committee. Would you identify yourselves and then continue, please?
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Dr. Susan Weller. I'm a professor at the University of Minnesota and director of the James Ford Bell Museum of Natural History.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Lee Famuler, and I'm chair of the advisory board for the Bell Museum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Park Kunkel. I'm a board member at the Bell Museum, and I teach astronomy and physics at Minneapolis Community and Technical College.
Well, thank you. You begin, please.
Yeah, I'm just going to start out briefly. Chair and committee members, we'd really like to begin on behalf of the board and all the museum staff to acknowledge and thank the legislature for providing general fund appropriation dollars last session, 2014, that enables us to construct a new museum on the St. Paul campus and to restore a public planetarium to the Twin Cities. We actually hired an architectural firm about 3 weeks ago. Work is beginning. We expect to break ground in 2016 and to open a new facility in 2018. So we're rapidly thinking about creating new programs and expanding successful ones, and we're here today to share with you one of those programs that we'd like to have you consider for legacy funding.
And before you continue, just briefly highlight for the new committee members that Representative Hausman in the various committees that I've been on was very instrumental in this funding for you. And as I, and you can give me maybe the details, but as I recall, after statehood, in the very early days, this was one of the first things that the state legislature did, was to establish a museum of natural history. Am I correct?
You're absolutely correct. In 1872, the state legislature enacted legislation that basically directed the state to create a museum of natural history and to do all the work under the Geological Survey, all the collections to be housed in a museum that the university would oversee.
Yeah, thank you.
Good memory.
Thank you for corroborating my information.
Well, thank you. Mr. Chair, Legacy Committee members, we are pleased to provide you an overview of our proposal entitled Building a Cultural Understanding, Stories from the Home Planet. The key details of our request are provided in the handout, and which is of this PowerPoint plus the attachment. Now, some might ask, why are the Arts and Cultural Heritage Legacy Funds appropriate for this project? The word culture has many meanings. It includes the visual arts, the performance arts, and anthropological history. We have a complex immigrant history from the diversity of different First Nation peoples who migrated here to the waves of European, Hmong, Somali, Latino, and other immigrants who now call Minnesota home. Each immigrant group brings its own culture and integrates into and enriches our present culture. The result, an amazing, rich mosaic that is greater than the sum of its parts. I would argue that Minnesota culture also includes our environmental history, how we relate to the land through farming, hunting, fishing, and recreational use. Children like these, shown here on the screen, will be making future decisions about our land and natural resources. It is our shared understanding of Minnesota's environmental legacy that informs how we take care of our resources for future generations. The overarching goal of our proposed project is to build a shared cultural understanding of Minnesota's natural history for our diverse Minnesota communities. The diversification of Minnesota is accelerating. People are attracted to immigrate here because of our strong economy, welcoming society, and high quality of life. We need to build consensus with newly arrived Minnesotans that our environmental heritage has great value. A more diverse Minnesota will approach environmental stewardship from a multicultural perspective. We need to prepare our future citizens to use and protect our natural resources. To prepare our future citizens, we propose to use the storytelling power of our portable planetarium, a digital theater. Many of you asked what it looked like, and so I brought a slide to show you. Currently, we have one Explorer-Dome that travels to communities and schools around the state, and here you see the dome set up in a Winona school gym. Inside, we use our programs to actively engage students and their communities around topics like local environmental issues, and we encourage them to share their stories about the stars. The funding we request will enable us to expand and launch a new program, more than doubling our reach and making the impact that Minnesota needs. Here in this graphic, you can see that we've reached 45 counties over the past 3 years, and our current capacity is limited to 11,000 students a year, which is why we are requesting a second Explorer-Dome and educator workshops, and so that huge portable planetarium folds up and gets into a minivan.
Can we go back one slide, please?
Oh, sure.
That map again.
So there's the map, and the ones in green are the ones that we've reached, and the ones in blue we need to work on.
Seems like right about in the middle there, there's a blue one with green all around it.
Yep. I don't know how we managed that.
That happens to be where the chairman of this committee lives.
I will tell my Explorer Dome educators to get on that one, sir.
Thank you.
It's totally accidental, sir.
Chairman, obviously the local legislator hasn't done a good enough job of pointing it out to them.
So what we're...
Continue, please.
What we are requesting is a second one of these to deliver... This exciting program we are developing right now, Stories from the Home Planet, Historias de Nuestra Planeta. And this is a brand new program in its pilot phase, courtesy of funding from the U.S. State Department. It's a Fulbright program for museums. And so here you see our partners, Colombian educators, visiting us in January. They actually enjoyed the cold and snow during a major polar vortex that was here that week. And this program connects expert teachers from Wellstone, Highland Park, and Como with educators in Medellin, Colombia. The goal of this museum teacher exchange program is to create bilingual environmental lessons and enable students in St. Paul and Colombia to learn about global environmental issues with local examples. For example, the one lesson focuses on the importance of climate and water. And here you can see in the graphic, this is what the surface temperatures look like from a satellite. I don't know if my cursor will work, but no, it doesn't. So we'll just go back the other way. And so Medellin was a warm 80 degrees Fahrenheit in January while we were, well, you know how cold we were. And so one of the things these lessons do is focus on how climate affects the water cycle and also affects what plants grow in both places. But we won't just tell students about the plants outside. We want them to go outside themselves and measure and observe and learn about their Minnesota natural history. This is the approach we've taken with local Minnesota schools to develop impactful learning and service projects. These are high school students from Patrick Henry with their teacher identifying trees and discussing forest health. What you don't see is the Bell educator who assisted with developing and delivering this lesson. He's the one taking the photo. He's also was a student at the University of Minnesota, which brings me to our advantage. As the state's Natural History Museum located At the University of Minnesota, we can effectively and efficiently bring world-class research into local classrooms. We do not have to wait for textbooks to be written. We work with our faculty and school educators to develop hands-on, immersive science experiences that meet students' needs, like this honeybee science lab. The students learn about bees, how our food production relies on honeybees, and the students themselves come up with ideas about how to help bees. Independent evaluation demonstrates that our programs have a proven ability to close the student achievement gap. They're extracting honey in this slide, so they get to take a little jar of honey home to remind them of their learning experience. Another advantage is our participation in a growing network of planetariums across the state, shown here as red stars. These have a technical capacity to link up via software called Domecast. It's like Skype for planetariums, and it enables educators to connect simultaneously so that someone in Duluth can be helping an educator in the Twin Cities deliver a shared environmental science lesson or astronomy lesson. Our request includes professional development opportunities for our planetarium partners and local educators so that there's a multiplier effect across this funding. And our intent is to partner with the Minnesota Regional Network of Planetariums to make the program sustainable beyond the initial legacy funding we are requesting. The portable Exploradome will help us fill regional gaps like that critical county we're missing in the middle of this map. To summarize, building a cultural understanding, stories from the home planet, will prepare our newest citizens to use and protect our natural resources wisely. We are requesting $535,000 over 2 years to purchase a second Exploradome system, support educator professional development workshops, and serve an additional 100 communities in greater Minnesota free of charge. And we will leverage the Minnesota Regional Planetarium Network partners and community connections to double the number of families and children we serve in greater Minnesota, to have training and support for our partners, and create that sustainable delivery system of programs through the network. Our goal is to serve all 100% of all Minnesota counties by the time the museum opens in 2018. In other words, we will be building a shared cultural understanding of our Minnesota environmental heritage. So I thank you for your attention, and we are happy to respond to any questions you may have. Thank you.
Anyone have any questions? Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are you including the van?
Yes, we need a whole new system. So we have one system that's a van plus a portable planetarium that folds up into it. So we're requesting a second system. So we would need the second van plus the portable. Does that make sense? Let me back up.
And two vans are better than a long trailer? Mr. Chair?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, if I want to put a van in different, where was that graphic? In different counties at the same time, I need two planetariums and two vans to go to two different places. Does that make sense? So right now our capacity is limited by the fact we have just one system, and we wish to double our capacity.
And you are requesting as part of your request, that includes the cost of a van?
Yes, sir.
And so, Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Then this total cost is $535,000. That's the total amount that you're asking for this year, or in these 2 years?
Ms. Weller.
Or is it 800 and whatever?
No. Okay. Mr. Chair.
Nine.
Ms. Weller.
I'll get this right. Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy. The entire request for 2 years is $535,000.
And Mr. Chair, and what fund are you anticipating that would come from?
Ms. Weller.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, the Arts and Cultural Legacy Fund.
And
Representative Murphy.
May I continue?
One more, then we'll get to Representative Kahn.
Okay, I'll stop.
Okay, Representative Kahn?
Well, Mr. Chairman, this isn't exactly a legacy issue, but since this is the only time you guys will be before me, I would like to ask it. I understand one of the part of the presentation for the moving of the Bell Museum was there was going to be some large use of land for some outside exhibits. What's happening with that part of the proposal? I understood there were some problems with that now.
Ms. Weller?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, the phase one of the project is on 7.5 acres. There is 12.9 acres set aside for the entire project. The remaining land is part of phase two, which we have not begun fundraising for.
Okay. So we're not off schedule to be doing that. I had been led to believe that there were some difficulties with it, but not.
Ms. Weller?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, it is on schedule according to university plans.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to thank you for your presentation. And Representative Murphy.
I just had a couple more questions.
Okay.
About the past. Mr. Chair, for anyone, did we get the photographic documentary of the Boundary Waters canoe fires?
Ms. Weller? Anybody?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy. I'm not, if you could please repeat your question or clarify.
Representative Murphy?
Did we complete the previous grant that had been given to Flanagan for a documentary of the Pagami Creek fire zone in the Boundary Waters canoe area, capturing the landscape during the third year post-fire recovery phase?
Ms. Weller?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I'm afraid that's not our project. The Bell Museum has not received legacy funding to date.
Okay, did we, Mr. Chair, did the Bell Museum receive money from the Clean Water Fund for sorting and identifying fish samples?
Ms. Weller?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, what we requested through LCCMR last year was funding to digitize our collections, but we did not receive, as far as I know, clean money from the Clean Water Act.
Ms. Weller?
Mr. Chair, the website, it intimates that this money went to the Bell Museum. These monies went to the Bell Museum.
Ms. Weller.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I think with deference to the people who are coming after us, given your very detailed questions, that I should set up an appointment to meet with you and work through these, because there are instances where a state agency, like the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, receives the funding, and because we are the state's natural history museum, those specimens by statute must come to the museum. So that may be we were a subcontract, but without going back and looking for that exact paperwork with MPCA, I really am not sure how to answer your questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Murphy, and if you meet, would you then report back to us as to the outcome, please. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
And next up is overview and funding request for the Science Museum.
Good They don't know.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee,
welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I'm Dr. Eric Jolly, president of the Science Museum in Minnesota. I am joined today with Mr. John Severson, director of corporate and government relations for the Science Museum of Minnesota. And I'm delighted to have this opportunity to talk about our work with the Legacy Commission and its funding. 108 years ago, sitting in the Minnesota Club, rather, six leading members of the state of Minnesota's government and politic bodies talked about creating a legacy for generations to come. Their act of faith, their investment, led to the founding of what became the Science Museum of Minnesota. We represent the legacy of arts and culture, of peoples and natural history, the artifacts and treasures of Minnesota, and the stories of the science-rich community that helped create so much of our economy and our future. I'm delighted today to be here to talk about our work with the legacy appropriations. In the last biennium, the Science Museum of Minnesota received positive and strong support from this committee and the state. We use that money to position us for an incredible advance in our technologies and the IMAX Theater and Dome Theater, our student programming, our outreach programming. We raised more than 50% in match for those programs. And today I'm happy to report to you that our request for this biennium will help us assure continuing the legacy you committed with your investment in us. Our school outreach program reached all 87 counties in Minnesota, served over 780,000 families and individuals, reached hundreds of thousands of school students in their classes and elsewhere, helped us preserve the Bishop Whipple collection of American Indian artifacts, the largest gifted American Indian artifact collection in the United States. We are using our legacy appropriation for the next biennium to advance this important work. We are requesting $1,199,855 because we don't waste money. It's an exact figure, down $1 million from our last biennium request, because this is the appropriate amount for what we need to do this year and next year. Our program will support school outreach, school educational supplements, the creation and maintenance of a visible conservation lab to allow students to witness the work of their museums in maintaining their own heritage. It will help us bring back the race exhibit that the Science Museum of Minnesota created. And since last shown in Minnesota and debuted in Minnesota, we have traveled it to the 50 largest cities in the United States, fostering incredible conversations, training tens of thousands of members of public safety forces across the nation, and leading to Minnesota having ownership of the most awarded and recognized single exhibit in the last 100-year history of American science and culture museums. We're bringing that exhibit back at a time when Minnesota needs it most of all to help foster conversations about the community we're building for our future, the legacy that we want for our children. Members, I thank you for all of your support. I'm proud of what we've done. I'm proud of what we're going to do even more with even less. We will be matching our legacy grant with donations from the Knight Foundation to allow us to work with other cultural lead institutions such as Penumbra Theater, and with the Noyce Foundation, who awarded us the first major award in Leading Lights of Museums so that we could advance the programs that your legacy funds provide a foundation for. I am pleased with how we've managed your money and I'm delighted with the plans of what we will bring the state in the future. I'm very happy to take questions.
Dr. Jolly, what percent of your total funding comes from the state?
The total, Mr. Chair, members, the total funding of the Science Museum of Minnesota last year was roughly $42 million, of which the state provides just under 3%. It is what we regard as perhaps the most important 3% of our budget because our success is built upon that 3%. I have been quite successful in finding donors who want to put their name on a cell lab, on an incredible collection of resources and materials, but I have found precious few who want to say, clean and safe environment, windows you can see through, and a floor that has no odor, brought to you by. And I thank you that the state of Minnesota brings a safe, healthy, and clean environment that allows me to do the business of our work, and it's the most important funding that we have. 3%, sir.
And one of the only musical stairways in Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, absolutely. And one which many museums have visited to copy and emulate. So you'll find the taste of Minnesota throughout this nation's museums.
Any questions or comments from anyone? Well, you've satisfied everyone today then, Dr. Jolly.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you so very, very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Kahn?
I just want to make a comment about all of the things that we're, just about all things that we're hearing today, is that, you know, one of the things we keep worrying about is not having enough STEM workers and that sort of thing. The first introduction to STEM is, frankly, through many of these things like museums, zoos, and things like that, and that's what gets kids interested in going into more abstract things, perhaps. So...
Well, thank you, Representative
Kahn. Just think of it as part of the economic development of the state.
And I'm sure that you got your start looking at the
exactly.
The geophysics of Dodger Stadium.
zoos, botanic gardens, and et cetera. Museums, yeah. Very important.
Next, overview and funding request for the North Star Boys Choir. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please identify yourselves and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Ralph Donay. Many of you see me on other committees down here doing veterans things, but today I'm doing part of what my second passion is, and that's helping the Minnesota North Star Boys Choir. We have approximately about 60 boys currently within the choir in three different age groups or three different sections. Mr. Anderson will be talking a little bit more about that, but to tell you what we do, we take boys, train them in how to sing. Anybody can just sing, "Oh, McDonald Had a Farm," but they are trained by a professional instructor.
According to Miss Devereaux in seventh grade, there was at least one boy who couldn't.
I didn't want to bring that out, Mr. Chair. Some secrets stay in school and some come out. Anyway, sir, the boys are given a lifetime memory. Each boy has to have a little, what do they call the book that they bring with them?
Memory book.
A memory book. And every day on tour, in the summertime when we go on tours, they have to write in that book something that they did on tour. That book stays with them for the rest of their life. While they are on tour, they have to write a letter home every day to either grandma, grandpa, or somebody to tell them what they did while they were on tour. The parents send letters ahead to the points where we're going to do concerts so that the boys get letters from home. We're not asking for a lot of money, and we realize it doesn't come from this committee. That'll probably come from the Arts Council. But we wanted to be able to show you what we do for Minnesota. We are bringing two choirs in from Europe this three choirs. Oh, another one's coming. That are coming to Minnesota to do joint concerts with us. We, I'm going to let Mr. Anderson talk about our tour that we did over in Europe. We had standing ovations everywhere the boys went. I believe we have a world-class choir with the North Star Boys Choir. Mr. Anderson.
Thank you. Identify yourself, please.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Craig Anderson. I'm the executive director and deputy artistic director of the North Star Boys Choir.
Proceed.
Quite a few years ago, about 1962, I had the pleasure of hearing the Vienna Boys Choir. And at that time, I had no interest in this sort of thing at all. I was asked to go with a friend of mine to hear them. And as I heard them, and they blew me away, I must say, it occurred to me that why did this little country of Austria have a program like this, and this huge country of the United States doesn't have such a thing? So with those memories in mind, back in 1976, I began working with a boys' choir. And a few years ago, we decided to split off and start a boys' choir that would be similar in nature to the Vienna Boys Choir in terms of training and what have you. And we brought over a man named Francis Stockwell, who actually worked with the Vienna Boys Choir. So between Mr. Stockwell and myself, we've put together what I believe is a pretty phenomenal program. We're trying very hard to attract boys into music. And, as we all know, there's a lot of things to compete with. Unfortunately, a lot of these boys don't have the ability to pay their way because we do have to charge a tuition. It's not a huge tuition, but some of them just can't afford to pay it. So what we're hoping is that we can gather enough funding to really make this thing work. Minnesota, as you know, is famous for its choral entities. Many of our colleges have world-famous choirs and what have you. And we have more boys' choirs in this state than any other state in the United States. So we're just one of them. But we're asking for a little help from the Arts Council.
Mr. Anderson, are there any girls' choirs?
There are children's choirs. There are a couple of girls' choirs in the Twin City area. But there are more children's choirs. And that would be boys and girls, of course.
Mr. Anderson, I'm just trying to skim through this, but how often, like in a week, do they actually practice? Or what is a typical timeline for them?
Well, Mr. Chair, we rehearse on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays some extra rehearsals at the time we do concerts.
For Mr. Anderson, for how long?
Well, Mr. Chair, we rehearse for an hour and a half on Tuesdays, an hour and a half on Thursdays, 3 hours on Saturdays.
Where's it gone?
Well, Mr. Chairman is the most educated and cultural person on this committee. Can you tell us what per aspera ad astra means?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Mr.
No,
Chair.
Tell her. Oh, no, I was asking the chairman.
Okay. My Latin is limited now to illegitimus non carborundum.
Mr. Chair, I can assist with that if you like.
That's I have to, for those that do know what that means, which I'm not going to say, but my sons gave me a stainless steel cube with that inscribed on it, so it's on my desk.
I think your staff guys all know what that
means. Yes. I'm sorry for the brief digression there, but let us continue. Well, we were on a Latin term that I actually don't know. But I'm sure Rebzef Khan does, but we'll let you answer.
All right. Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm sorry. It means through hard work to the stars. Per aspera ad astra. So that's kind of our thing. We teach the boys all sorts of things. It's not just singing. We teach them how to shine their shoes, how to set tables, how to shake hands with adults and look them in the eye, lots of things. So we teach responsibility. We teach pride of self, pride of state. And we travel the United States and the world, actually, as representatives of the state of Minnesota.
I would have known that had I just read this, but I thought it was the Bell Museum motto.
Actually, the state of Kansas, I think, has something similar to that also.
Okay, continue.
Mr. Chair, as you can see from the booklet on page 18, we do have medals from the World Choir Games. The World Choir Games happens every 4 years somewhere in the world. We were fortunate enough to take a bronze and a silver medal at the World Choir Games. So that puts us pretty high up as far as other choirs in the world wondering, where are these boys coming from that managed to do so well? And we're proud to say that they come from Minnesota.
Gentlemen, I do appreciate the fine work that you're doing. How much are you asking for, and what would you use it for?
Well, we had just said initially $10,000, but the singing lessons that the boys require comes to $30,000 a year. So we're just trying to get a partial thing to help some of the boys. We have a lot of boys this year whose parents are immigrants, and they're the first generation U.S. citizens, are their children. And so they don't have very good paying jobs, and they're struggling. They're making it, but they're struggling, and we would just like to make it a little bit easier for those families.
Okay. Well, Representative Hahn.
One more question. Looking, Mr. Chairman, looking through this, I noticed that almost all the boys, with the exception of maybe one, seem to be from private schools or home schools. Is there any connection to the public schools in either Minneapolis or St. Paul?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hahn, there's no affiliation to any church, to any school, to anything within Minnesota. They're just boys whose parents want them to excel at singing.
Well, I'm just...
Representative
Hahn. You know, the question is, should some approach be made to the public schools in Minneapolis and St. Paul? Just as the largest school system in the country, or in Okehennepin. I don't see anything there
either. I think the question is, Representative Kahn, do you make this known to other schools that this exists?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, we do. We do go out to schools a couple of times a year to perform for the kids, to let them know what's out there and hopefully recruit boys. At that point in time. Does that answer your question?
I guess it would be answered if you showed me in your schedule where you went to Minneapolis and or St. Paul public schools.
Well, we have not gone to Minneapolis, and we probably won't go to St. Paul, at least immediately, because there is a boys' choir in St. Paul, the Minnesota Boy Choir.
Uh-huh.
So I don't want to tread on their turf.
You're not looking to compete with them.
Yes.
Okay.
Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair, have you received money from the Arts Council before?
No, we have not.
Board?
Mr. Anderson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, no, we have not received money from the Arts Council previously.
Or from the Arts Board?
Our Arts Board.
Mr. Anderson, you haven't made a request yet, have you?
No, we have not. And the reason we have not is because, according to the Arts Board's bylaws, we have to have a budget of $180,000 or more to get operating funds of any kind, and we don't have that as yet.
But
Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Anderson, not from the regional arts councils.
The state arts board you're talking
state
about.
State arts board, but then there's a significant appropriation from the arts and heritage money that goes to the regional arts councils.
Okay.
What, well, Mr. Anderson, what Representative Murphy is suggesting is that you make the request not to the arts board itself.
Oh, I see.
But to the regional councils that are part of, you know, the arts board.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, that's correct. We're going to the regional arts committee. Is that what it's called? Yes.
Mr. Chair, I've also been told that you have to be in existence for a couple of years before you can apply. So that's another reason why we haven't done, applied right away. We had to be in existence for a couple of years.
Representative Kahn.
None of those are true, I believe, for the Regional Arts Council, which is what Representative Murphy is telling you. There are two things. The general fund appropriations goes to two things. More than that, but at least to the State Arts Board, which has those rules which I consider a little restrictive about the size of the budget and how long you have to have been in existence. But the Regional Arts Councils, of which there are 11 or 13, some number in the state, do not have those. They are supposed to take care of the smaller appropriations. So that was what Representative Murphy was drawing at, moving to us.
I guess as things go along, I mean, if you have questions about who you would apply to or how this would work, we could help you with that.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. Anything else? Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your time.
Next, we have the overview and funding request for the Minnesota Civic Education Coalition. Welcome.
Oh, thank you.
You identify yourselves, please, and make your presentation.
I'm Tracy Warnberg-Lem, and I represent Kids Voting St. Paul.
I'm Orville Lindquist, the director of Minnesota YMCA Youth in Government.
And I'm Jennifer Bloom. I'm the executive director of Learning Law and Democracy Foundation.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to be here today. We are members of the Minnesota Civic Education Coalition, which is a group of individuals and organizations that have worked together for many years to preserve Minnesota's civic heritage by passing along knowledge, traditions, and responsibilities to the next generation. Civic culture does not just happen. It is not a natural state. Sandra Day O'Connor said, "Knowledge of our system of governance and our rights and responsibilities as citizens is not passed along through the gene pool. Each generation of Americans must be taught these basics." We find ourselves in challenging times. The civic education need and civic knowledge gap is clear. I like to reference a January 2015 LA Times article, where a survey of adults conducted in September by the Annenberg Public Policy Center of the University of Pennsylvania found that only 36% could name all three branches of government, and 35% could not even name one. Only 27% of respondents knew that it requires two-thirds vote of the House and Senate to override a presidential veto. And 21% of adults wrongly thought that a 5-4 Supreme Court decision may be returned to Congress for reconsideration. Even in Minnesota, where we enjoy a healthy civic culture that is the envy of many, we need to focus much more time and attention on civic education to address this looming crisis that becomes more apparent each day. We must work together to change the direction and preserve the civic heritage and civic culture we all hold dear. Through legacy funds, the Civic Education Partners are using over 90 years of collective civic education experience to deliver programming that is frequently cited as highly effective and best practices in building educated, effective, engaged young people. Our coalition creates opportunities for students, we enrich teacher capacities, and we are building statewide networks to scale up our efforts. Each of our coalition partners is going to speak briefly about the legacy funds that they've received in the past and what's been accomplished with those and what we would like to do with future legacy funds. We have a document that's been circulated that tells a little bit that we're going to go through. So the map on the front page I want to draw your attention to gives a snapshot of the communities we've served in the past 2 years, and as you can see, we have much more work to do. Speaking for Kids Voting, which is in the back in the middle, During this past cycle, we reached just 49,900 K-12 students in 40 communities across the state in 23 counties that had an opportunity to cast a kids' voting ballot on November 4th, 2014. This more than doubled the students we reached over the 2012 presidential election. 130 high school students, most of them were Hmong, Somali, Latino, and African American, were trained in ranked choice voting in Minneapolis. Students across the state received 100,000 coloring books, I voted stickers, ballot boxes, bookmarks, things to enhance their civic learning. We developed a Twin Cities hub that has helped reach 23 additional students. And we co-hosted a Civic Saturday event with the Minnesota Children's Museum and had 130 students participate in a vote there with Governor Dayton. In the future, we would like to seek additional legacy funds to develop a Youth at the Booth program to engage high school students in meaningful voting activities, including increasing the participation in the Student Election Judge program. We want to increase the students that can have kids voting opportunities by 20,000 during the 2016 presidential election. We want to continue to expand our network, create and disseminate civic heritage materials, and deepen our partnerships with Minnesota communities to expand the efforts that we've started.
Mr. Chair, members, on the YMCA Youth and Government front, we have been conducting with legacy funds issues-based forums in the summer, basically Summer Institute for middle school and high school students, which has been in addition to our regular youth and government programming where we bring students together for a model legislature, model United Nations. The legacy appropriations have been used really for this narrow purpose of the Summer Institute. So we've been conducting these for a number of years. We ran one last summer. We're running one this summer, sort of at the tail end of this biennium. And so we've worked with, over the last 2 years, close to 200 young people, several college students and adult advisors, again, focused on issues. Our regular programming focuses on process, which is important and great, and issues tend to come along with that. We really looked at this and said, let's take an opportunity to bring young people together to really focus on the issues, not worrying about process. Young people don't usually sit around the lunchroom tables talking about the environment or violence prevention or discrimination. But we really find in our regular programming that they really want to talk about these things. And so the Summer Institute has been a vehicle to really do that. Students get excited about that. Not maybe every student, but a lot of students really do. So that's been our piece of this. We've really been putting these Summer Institutes on for the last several years. What we would like to do, if you choose to fund it, would be to shift gears a little bit coming forward and working on expanding the network for youth and government throughout the state and bringing in more communities, more students into the systems. And we really find that it's hard to work with teachers, it's hard to work with school administrators. There's a lot that competes with the time for these folks. And planting the seeds isn't enough. That's something we do in our everyday work. We really need to be able to go out, have some dedicated people to not only plant the seeds, but water them and tend the gardens, really spending time with teachers and administrators to help plant delegations in some communities, particularly those communities in northern Minnesota, which are surrounded by blue. So we really want to expand that reach over the next several years and do this for the long term. This isn't in and out sort of work. This is day in, day out, month in, month out, year in, year out work. And we really want to bring some resources to those local schools to help cover that civic ed gap.
Mr. Chair, members
Ms.
of the
Bloom.
Committee, my name is Jennifer Bloom again, and I am the Director of Learning Law and Democracy Foundation. And I'm looking at our map, and I'm hoping that Representative Erdahl, that you've got a blue dot. I'm not sure, but I'm hoping. Teachingcivics.org.
It's close.
He'll get it next. Teachingcivics.org is the website that was funded a handful of years ago by the Legacy Fund. And I have to say that it never would have happened but for the grant from the Legacy Committee, and I want to thank you for that. The impact today of TeachingCivics.org, just a snapshot, and you can find our information on the first top third of the back of the information sheet. But we have 230 cities that have educators and teachers and other kind of community leaders who access lessons on our site. In the last year, there's been 3,242 sessions of people visiting. They average 4 lessons per session, which makes for a total of 17,572 pages access. Now, not all of those pages access were written by us. Couldn't possibly be. But the TeachingCivics.org site actually vets lessons and curriculum materials and resource materials from other organizations from around the country. They are civic education organizations. We align them with our standards. We make sure that these materials are accurate, they are up to date, and they're not agenda driven. And I want to highlight that because more and more organizations are seeing a way to boost their message is by creating sort of curriculum materials and posting them on their sites. And they often will present one side of the argument and not the other side. So we have teachers and law students and lawyers who go through the materials and decide whether it's something that we want to share, highlight for our teachers in Minnesota. Last month, we had 153 new users, and I want to just give you a couple of thoughts about this. Our top 10 cities in using the website are Minneapolis and St. Paul, of course. They average around 700-800 people using it. Roseville, North Branch, Shoreview, Forest Lake, St. Cloud, Albany, Cambridge, and Winona. Now, that's not the entire story about the website, because there are teachers in very small communities that maybe there's one or two teachers, and we're trying to reach out to those folks. So in Laverne, where there are two teachers there that have accessed the website, when they come, they visit generally for an average of 15 pages, and they stay for about 20 minutes. So they are retrieving information and resources that they're using in their communities. Some of the other small communities that benefit in this way, Casson, Delano, Holly, Mountain Iron, Deer River, Pelican Rapids. The website links to Minnesota resources that we've actually developed with the legacy funds. So we've created materials on juvenile justice, which is required by our new civics and government standards, on comparing the Minnesota Constitution with the U.S. Constitution, on Minnesota voting, and in fact, just short, not a long time ago, 120 fifth graders at Red Rock Elementary in Woodbury participated in our new voting unit. It's about a 4-day curriculum, and they successfully did that. What are we going to do in the next year? We're going to finish our Minnesota Constitution app. It's going to iPhone app. And it will provide students who have to compare those two documents with the resources at their fingertips. So they'll be able to see the language from the Minnesota Constitution, compare it with anything that's similar in the U.S. Constitution. They'll be able to find out if there's a little bit of history about this language. They'll learn definitions. They will find out about legislation related to that section and cases related to that section. Our organization reaches about 400 teachers a year in providing training on all the resources that we have and on using the website. And our teachers reach over 200,000 students a year. Our goal for the next biennium for all three of us is to look at that map and say, we need to target our time and attention to the communities that have not thus far benefited from the efforts of the legacy-funded activities. Sometimes that's going to be, as Orville said, actually going and meeting and meeting more than once. Sometimes it's using technology. How do we bring Project Citizen, which is one of our great programs, how do we bring students from International Falls? They can't drive down here to participate, but how do we bring them in through the internet and using technology? In closing, we are very grateful, all of us, to the funding support that we've received from the Legacy Committee. We know the impact it has had on tens of thousands of students across the state. to increase this impact to address the underserved communities. We are asking for $300,000 per year to expand our programs and target our neighborhoods that need our help. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for your support.
No, thank you. And just add from my standpoint that I was a former history teacher who taught civics education as well in the Constitution. I commend the work that you're doing, and I actually have a bill that's kind of emphasizing that this year as well. Other questions or comments? Well, then, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have one more overview and funding request, the state, Minnesota State Council on Disability.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair, as they're coming forward, I understand today's a big day in Minnesota history. One of our leading state authors has published, and I believe a book is freshly out from the press, and as there are going to be quite a few press requests and media opportunities to, and then book readings and signings, because I'm curious.
Well, you know, I don't know about leading anything anywhere, but a somewhat obscure author did have another book that was released on Friday. And I appreciate that you bring that up. So it's called Three Paths to Glory, and it's by me. and it is now available. But anyway, that aside, welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon. My name is Joan Wilshire. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota State Council on Disability. And good to know. We'll rush on and get your book after this, we're done testifying. Yeah, so
sounds good to me.
Okay. Thank you today for bringing us forward here today to talk about what we've been doing with the last biennium's proposal from the Legacy Committee, and the opportunity to talk about what we'd like to move forward for this upcoming session as well. Just a little history. MSCOT is a small state agency that was created 41 years ago as an advisory agency to Minnesota government. MSCOT received a $400,000 appropriation from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund to celebrate and preserve and raise awareness of the disability community through the 25th anniversary of the signing and passage of the Americans with Disabilities Act, and to highlight and increase awareness of disability culture in Minnesota with a focus on employment. A number of activities were planned, including an historical documentary production, public opinion survey and research, and an ADA celebration slash training, plus a public policy conference. Activities will stress the importance of disability culture and the low employment rate of people with disabilities. The goals of this project are: one, Minnesotans will recognize the importance of the disability culture. Two, Minnesota employers understand the obstacles to employment facing people with disabilities. And three, Minnesotans gain a more complete picture of the Americans with Disabilities Act, including the Minnesotans who played key roles in passage and its 25-year impact on our community and culture. Activities recognizing and celebrating the 25th anniversary of the signing of the Americans with Disabilities Act are being managed not only by MSCOT, but by committees with our partners from around the state. Committee members are people with disabilities, colleagues from disability-related organizations, state agency partners, and representatives from local governments, as well as private and corporate business entities. Committees oversee our legacy grant activities, and these activities are: the first one is our documentary that we are currently working on with the Twin Cities Public Television, TPT, on the history and current state and future goals of the Americans with Disabilities Act. It will include Minnesota's involvement, as well as many of the individuals vital to the creation and signing of the ADA in 1990. This documentary will be aired on a regular basis on TPT for at least the next 5 years. Two, the July 26, 2015 Minnesota History Center Family Day. This is your official invitation to this day-long celebration that will be held on the actual 25th anniversary of the signing of the ADA. The TPT documentary will be shown. There will be speakers and plenty of family-focused events. This event will be free and will feature a variety of artists from the disability community. As a result of this 2015 partnership with the History Center, they have already committed to making the celebration an annual event. Number three, the October 28, 2015 Statewide Policy Conference and Cultural Celebration. MSCOD will hold an employment-related policy conference in St. Paul, which will hold around 600 to 700 attendees. The conference will include nationally recognized speakers, breakout sessions, and a live TPT broadcast of the noon hour program. We will also be connecting with 6 to 8 communities throughout Minnesota as they hold their own local celebrations. TPT will broadcast this event live throughout the state, very similar to what they do for the Martin Luther King Day celebration. Now, just an added note here, when MSCOD originally applied for the Arts and Legacy Grant 2 years ago, the arts component of this grant was to be fulfilled by a theatrical production, which would be performed around the state. However, MSCOD learned early on that physical and programmatic accessibility were barriers to a successful theatrical experience for our community and determined a TPT documentary and TPT live coverage of the policy conference noon hour will reach a far greater audience, especially given that the TPT documentary will be shown in the next 5 years within TPT's regular programming. So as you can see, the exposure for this event was much more so by doing it this way with the actual documentary and with TPT. The fourth product we're working on is the employment survey. MSCOD has partnered with the Improve Group, a St. Paul-based research and evaluation firm, to conduct an employment survey focusing on the low employment rates among people with disabilities. The survey is studying three groups, employers, people with disabilities who are employed, and people with disabilities who are seeking work. In addition, focus groups from around the state have been held in an effort to uncover reasons for this low unemployment rate. Survey data is needed, basically, for our TPT documentary and the two events previously mentioned. The survey data will be publicly disseminated at local and national conferences, shared with state agencies, and you, the legislature, as well, in an effort to increase employment of people with disabilities and spreading the word about disability culture. The fifth area of work will be community engagement. Funds will be directed to the disability community around Minnesota so they may host their own ADA 25th anniversary celebration events as well as participate in the live TPT broadcast during the employment conference in October. And sixth, disability awareness. Every partner, consulting services, and product MSCOD has engaged during this project have increased their own disability culture already. Examples: TPT and Imprint Group now understand the methods and importance of digital accessibility. That's websites, documents, and et cetera. And the methods and importance of this, and are better equipped now to handle the digital accessibility issues. The Minnesota History Center has committed to improve their physical and programmatic accessibility as well. So we're already making a difference with the legacy funds that we're using currently. Now I'd like to turn it over to my legislative coordinator, David Fenley, and we'll talk about our upcoming proposal we're looking to talk about as well.
Thank you, Mr. Fenley.
Good afternoon, Chair and members. David Fenley. So with our 2013 legacy appropriation, the State Council on Disability engaged and continues to engage the disability community to raise awareness of disability culture. There's still much work to be done, though. Throughout this project, the Council on Disability has observed that throughout Minnesota culture, including the organizations we've interacted with, there is little or no disability cultural awareness. There is a sense that cultural awareness only relates to communities of color, ethnicity, and or religion. There is very little understanding of how to interact with the disability community or the civil rights laws that apply to people with disabilities. Employment is just one of the critical elements to a fully functioning, meaningful culture that our proposal seeks to affect. People with disabilities are underemployed compared to their non-disabled fellow citizens. 70% of people with disabilities have been left out of the workforce. We believe that without employment, culture struggles to have an impact. It is through a job that Minnesotans can engage their community and contribute to society. We envision when Minnesotans gain perspective on the disability community, when Minnesotans see people with disabilities in theaters, on screen, at sporting or other recreational events, at grocery stores, in the voting booth, just maybe they might also think about hiring them. The 2013 Legacy Grant we received has begun to change the awareness of disability culture. We've built new and lasting relationships with, as Joan stated, the History Center and TPT, and they have both committed to working with our agency moving forward. The History Center would like to have a yearly museum program to commemorate each anniversary of the passing of the Americans with Disabilities Act. This is also true for our relationship with TPT. We will continue to work with them in reaching out to the rural communities through live broadcasting of future events. This is a great opportunity for legacy funds to make a lasting, long-lasting cultural impact. The disability community needs to continue this important groundbreaking work so that people with disabilities realize full integration into employment, recreation, housing, voting, transportation, and all facets of Minnesota life. People with disabilities are an integral part of Minnesota culture. Disability happens in everyone's community. It knows no color, ethnicity, religion. Disability is an equal opportunity protected class, and it has its own well-developed and documented culture. Through this grant that we're proposing, the Council on Disability will turn the dial on disability awareness in Minnesota. On the next page, we have outlined a budget. What we're requesting is $629,000 to do three specific things. The first one is develop a cultural competency training for human resource professionals that aims to dispel misconceptions about employing people with disabilities. Second, we will work with the Minnesota History Center for 2 years in order to develop a permanent museum installation. I'm not going to say that word right. You know what I'm trying to say. He's celebrating the legacy of Minnesota disability culture. And third, disability culture awareness television cable show. Our agency is looking to partner with Disability Viewpoints, a monthly cable TV show that focuses on topics in the disability community. This show has won several awards and has been nationally recognized as a one-of-a-kind cable television show. The show is not currently captioned for the deaf or hard of hearing or auditory explained for the blind. That's it. If you have any questions, we'd be happy to entertain them now.
Does anyone have any questions? Comments? Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Finley, has TPT or the television stations offered to do this TV show that you're talking on number three, the monthly cable TV show?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy.
Yes.
Currently, the Disability Viewpoints, you can view that once a month through CTTV in the northern suburbs, Roseville area, and so forth. TPT has picked up last year's shows, and you can see those. I was just told, because a friend of mine called me up and said, I saw you on TV, and so it was last year's show. So TPT has picked up last year's shows with Disability Viewpoint and is showing those once a month. I think it's on the third Monday of the month. And so they're willing to partner and do that. And it was on Metro Cable Channel 6, and because that is an added fee that is included in here, that would be, if we did receive the funding for it, it would now be put back on Metro Cable Channel 6.
Okay,
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, then is that's on there, not their stations, but another station, or one of their, it's not on their most popular station. It's on one of their three others.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, are you talking about
Ms. TPT? Ms. Wilshire.
The TPT My understanding of the when the Disability Viewpoints is on that third Monday of the month, it's on 10:30 p.m. and at 4:30 a.m.
Oh, not such a convenient time period, Miss. And that's what I was trying
you
to understand to get to. If we do number three, are those television systems that are going to carry this, are they going to think of that as a mandate then that they have to do or that they want to do?
I think that'd be a question for them.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy.
Ms. Wilshire.
Not quite sure if I'm gathering the question, but are you regarding when we look to close caption it and make it accessible for people who are blind? Is that what you're wondering about?
No.
Representative Murphy.
You want to reach more people on what you're producing. Mm-hmm. How are you going to do that? You're looking, it says partnerships, or you would, MSCOD is looking to partner with Disability Viewpoints and so forth. So you're trying to get the most public access as you can, and that would be in on the radio and TV, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, but you're looking for $34,000 to do this, and I assume that's for production.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, right.
Ms. Wilshire.
A certain amount that goes for the editing and the production and then the closed captioning and et cetera. So that's all kind of packaged together. And the good news is when Disability Viewpoints does these shows, it also gets put online currently right now with CTTV in Roseville. So there's an online availability, which is quite successful too. So if people, if you don't live in the northern suburbs, you're not going to be able to get that particular channel, but you can go to the website and watch it there as well. So there's another opportunity, and that's why making sure that the product is captioned is vital for the entire disability community to be able to access it. So that we are, I understand, getting the most for your bang for your buck, because I know now you're all be DVRing the TBT times right at the 4:30 a.m. to watch it. So,
and Mr. Chair,
Representative Murphy,
it's good that if someone's up at that time and feel the need to watch television, that something good is on. But Mr. Chair, you are absolutely right, and I think I agree totally with you that we should ask them when AMPRS and TPT come back and Minnesota Public Radio comes back, we can ask because they've brought up how part of the emergency alert system that they're also they're responsible for carrying out to the people, and it seems to me this is an extension of that that mission, and everybody should be partnering together, and maybe they're, rather than individual $34,000, it can be part of the whole.
Well, thank you.
So,
anything else?
Good thought, Mr. Chair.
There are no more comments or questions?
Mr. Yes. If I may, just in response to when you talk about the emergency broadcast system that TPT is currently working on and moving forward with, we are in conversation with TPT and working on the emergency preparedness with them, because that is an issue my agency works on directly with Homeland Security. So the result of this project, working with TPT on the ADA piece, one day they were in our conference room and our emergency preparedness brochures were just sitting at our conference room table, and he's like, you do this work? And we said, yeah. And so there, hence, now we started another conversation with TPD. So it's just been a wonderful opportunity working with them. So it's been good.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Don't think there are any other questions. The final item on our agenda today is House File 613, which Representative Torkelson was going to present, but he is ill today, and so Representative Kahn is going to present the bill. And while they're getting into position here, I must commend you, Representative Murphy, for really being on top of your game today, in spite of the fact that your hockey team, for the sixth straight time, didn't quite make it.
Mr. Chair, the bleeding has not stopped. And it would be wise to wait a while.
I will say, Representative Murphy, that there are an awful lot of teams in the state of Minnesota that would give everything to finish runner-up six straight times in the state tournament. I'm being serious there.
Mr. Chair, I certainly appreciate that. And we have a new opportunity next week, this week, when the boys are coming down and meeting Minneapolis Johnson or something in basketball. It still hurts.
I'm sure I'm still suffering from the fourth place finish that my son's team was in a long time ago. All right. Representative Kahn.
Yes. Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure what procedure you
We are going to lay this bill over for possible inclusion.
So do I move that?
You can move that.
Okay. I move that House File 613 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Legacy Bill, and I would like to introduce the two people who will really talk to you about it in a more knowledgeable fashion.
Thank you, Representative Kahn. I might say also, I understand that there is an amendment, but it's not ready to be presented today, and therefore, before this would be included in the Legacy Bill, we would have a motion to include the amendment later.
Okay.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm David O'Fallon. I'm the president of the Minnesota Humanities Center. And with me, and I've stolen her away from her school today, is Robin Nelson, an educator who's worked deeply with the Humanities Center. So I'll give you the highlights of the Humanities Center, if I may.
Yes, great. Proceed.
I think you all got a handout that looks like this, with some charts on the front. And I wanted to tell you briefly, you gave us money, and here's what we did with it. And then what we plan to do next.
Thank you.
You can see that we sort of have two streams of funding. The Minnesota Humanities Center got a total appropriation of, you can see, $3.515 million. Most of that is funding that goes through the center, and we host other organizations, some of which you heard from just minutes ago. The Council for Disabilities, for example. That is mostly pass-through funding. The Humanities Center serves as a good umbrella for legacy funding. We're a good steward. Jim Noble's shop has done a couple of audits on us, so we're solid in terms of being a good home base for other programs. I'd like to direct your attention more, though, to the left-hand side of that front page, the direct appropriation to the Humanities Center, and you can see we have sort of two major streams there. We are an education center for the whole state, and you might remember the very first presentation you heard today from the Bell Museum was about the increasing diversity of the state's population. That's a need we address pretty directly by creating original professional development, new material, new resources that meet people who've been in the state sometimes for a long time, like the Dakota and the Ojibwe peoples, the people who are more recent immigrants, like Irish and Italian and Norwegians and Swedes, and people who are more recently to us, like Asian American, Somali, and so forth. We're also a great partner with other organizations. If I can direct your attention to that second page, you'll see a list of people that we've recently partnered with just in the last biennium or so. And I love it because I love saying this, the Humanities Center has no authority. We don't license anybody. We don't regulate anything. We don't tell anybody anything they have to do. So a test of whether we're serving a need is if people choose to work with us. And over 80 organizations and over 10,000 people and over 20 or 200 communities last couple of years chose to work with us. the third page you can see in, just some highlights. One I'd like to point out, a couple I'd like to point out, we have a particular value to bring into public life and to public education information, stories that's often been left out or not told. And here's one. There's a lot of anxiety right now about young Somali men and women being recruited into some pretty negative circumstances. We worked with the Somali community a few years ago to capture some of their oral tradition into literature. That has been reprinted. Thousands of copies are now distributed across the state. And what I love to share with you is that just a couple of years ago, USAID called us up and asked for permission to reprint 50,000 copies of the Somali literature that you helped create with legacy funding here because of the concerns and the need to bring in positive, strong cultural strength to that community. That's underway. Another major initiative of ours has been to work with veterans whose voice has sometimes been left out or told in maybe two boxes. One is you're all heroes or you're all traumatized. We've created the Veterans Voices Award Program, which some of you have seen and participated in. I'm very, very pleased that that program has really taken off. It celebrates veterans and their continuing contributions to the strength of the state. Some of you know, and again, I'm very proud of this, the Humanities Center was home base for, I think, last year, the only totally consensus vote in the House and the Senate to create October as Veterans Voices Month. We're the only state in the nation to have set aside an entire month. And part of what the Humanities Center will do as the home base for that is to create the educational materials, the resources, the speakers' networks, and so forth, so that month is not just a date on the calendar, but in fact a real sense of veterans and community coming together. We have some other information you can see. I will point out that you give us a dollar and we leverage it three or four times. We are chartered by the state, but we operate as a nonprofit. So I'm very pleased, as my close friend and colleague Dr. Jolly said, state funding is extremely important to us, and we do raise significant other funding to go out and connect across the entire state.
So, Dr. O'Fallon, the same question that I gave to Dr. Jolly, mm-hmm. What percent of state money do you use?
I'm sorry you asked that of Dr. Jolly, because mine is quite a higher percentage. So
that's all right.
I think probably state funding for us is close to 75-80% of our funding overall.
But it's the most important part.
Well, it is a critically important part. Indeed it is. And, of course, it's not in front of this committee, but there's a state government operations appropriation to us, which is that is really the electricity and the water and to keep the doors open. This is the programming funding. This Minnesota Humanities Center is one of the top two or three in the nation by size and by impact, and we're the only one, I think there may be one other, that has our own retreat center. So we actually, just to be personal with you, the real mission of the Humanities Center is to articulate what connects us rather than what divides us. It drives our education programming. It drives our veterans programming. How do we hang together in this somewhat divisive and angry time? That's the work of the Humanities Center. And to have a place that feels safe, that we can invite people, really matters. And we're all over the state, as you can see from the state map attached. Now, so that this doesn't seem too theoretical, I've asked a colleague and a friend and an experienced educator, Robin Nelson. She's looking around. Who is that? If she'd speak briefly to the work, the education strategy, and the approach and the materials of the Minnesota Humanities Center. Mr. Chairman, with your permission.
Thank you. Ms. Nelson.
I'm a little bit overwhelmed to be here today. This isn't what I planned on today, but thank you so much for having me. Thank you, Chairman, and all the members. My path has crossed the Minnesota Humanities Center many times in the last 15 years. I'm in Indian education. That's where my life and my heart lies, and I've been in Indian education for the last probably about 25 years. It's very important to me to be able to help with teaching the Minnesota State Standards as they apply to Ojibwe and Dakota student or cultures, to students that are Native and non-Native. And with that, I've had the delight to work with the Minnesota Humanities Center and all the wonderful people that are housed there several times. So when David called and asked if I would drop my cleaning closets today and come in and visit with you, I said, sure, but exactly what am I going to talk about? And so I was thinking about it, and it all comes down to answering one question. Why do I think that the Minnesota Humanities Center is so successful? And in a word, it comes down to a word, because they develop new and original programming with communities, not for them. What they do is so terrific, because what they do is they go in and come up with an idea, present it to the community, build relationships within that community, figure out how this program is going to work, and by building those relationships helps to integrate it for some really complex problems, and are willing to work with that community to put the programming in place and then see what works and doesn't work and modify it. And I think that's what's so special about it, is because they're so respected. I can tell you in the Indian community, the Ojibwe and Dakota community, they're very well respected because they take the time to build those relationships. They respectfully ask for help in the areas that they need and will bring forth all the expertise that they have on their side to make things work. And I think that's what makes them special. And the other thing is that if you ever go to the Minnesota Humanities Center, you go in there and you feel all this positive energy. And I felt it the moment I walked in there for the very first time, and it's never left me. Because the people that are working there really believe in what they're doing, and they really are looking for other people to get on board. And I've worked with teachers and administrators in school districts across the state because of what I do. And I can tell you, you can develop anything you want to, but unless you get those people to get on board with you and buy into what you're going to do, you're spending a lot of time that will go nowhere. The Minnesota Humanities people are really, really good on welcoming you to the table and making sure that you have a place on the bus. So, and I'm just very happy that they have come into my life, and we seem to cross sections every now and again. So, miigwech.
Okay, thank you. You know, looking at the bill, and I understand this might be part of the amendment coming. Mm-hmm. It says $200,000 in fiscal 2016. I don't know if you know what amount is coming. Do you know? Dr. O'Fallon? I mean, is that the ask? Is it $200,000, or are we asking for something different?
Mr. Chair and members, we're asking for $200,000 a year.
A year.
Each year. That would be the amendment. That's correct.
Right. Yeah, because that wouldn't be... Now I understand.
Right.
Is some of that going to be used for Native American education?
Mr. Chairman and members... Yes, indeed, part of that is. And in fact, our continuing commitment, as many of you probably know, we have created an exhibit called Why Treaties Matter with the Dakota and Ojibwe Nations. It's unusual, actually, in the USA. It has toured the state now for a number of years. And in terms of the spirit of partnership and kind of leverage what you have, the MNSCU system has picked up that exhibit. It will be in every single MNSCU campus over the course of the next couple of years. Part of this would be then to support educational materials. And to the point that Robin made, it's not enough just to have an exhibit. You need to actually have time with people to have a real impact. That needs to be something that is happening on the campuses and in the communities around the campuses. So the funding helps people, in fact, engage the educational materials, get together. So that's some of that expense would be for that, yes.
Okay, thank you. Representative Wills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was curious a little bit as well, Mr. O'Fallon, about the appropriation and the request here. And looking at the past requests and how it's outlined between what goes more directly to the Humanities Center programs and then the pass-through. Mm-hmm. So I have a couple questions. First of all, for the request that would end up being $400,000 over the biennium, would that include pass-through appropriations for these groups that are listed in the right-hand column?
Dr. Fallon.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wills, no. I'm only asking for the funding that would support directly the programs that you've seen briefly sketched in here for the Humanities Center itself. The legislature in this committee will have a say in terms of what else they might want to umbrella under or go through with the Humanities Center.
And then a follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so we'll watch for other language for those particular programs, but I did have a question on the list of the different children's museums listed here. I noticed mm-hmm. that the for past appropriations mm-hmm. that the Minnesota Children's Museum of Rochester is not on the list. Have they not received funding, and why would that be, or is that included in the Minnesota Children's Museum appropriation?
Dr. Fallon.
Mr. Chair and Representative, my understanding is that they are actually umbrellaed under the Minnesota Children's Museum in past legacy funding. And the fact is, I don't really have a direct say about the Rochester Museum. I know they've been partnered with the Minnesota Children's Museum. And they might be bringing forward a separate bill.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Wills?
Done? That's it. Thank you.
All right. All right. Any other questions or comments? Ms. Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to tell you that the Why Treaties Matter exhibit is now at Century College, and all of our students from North St. Paul have been invited to a panel discussion on it. We were invited to the opening, and we're able to take some of our American Indian students there, and now we're going to be a part of that panel discussion as well. So we have some direct contact that we're really looking forward to.
Well, thank you. This bill then will be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, looking at the minutes from last week,
thank you, Representative.
Could you tell me what fund the request from Greg Lay and Chad Dayton with Wilderness Inquiry wanted their money from? Is that Parks and Trails,
yes,
or was
I
it culture?
Representative Murphy, I don't know that they asked specifically for which. I guess we would have to make a determination which one they would most likely qualify for, and we can have that discussion as we go through this.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything else? Well, then, King, this case is closed.